most miserable experiences in my life, right? So like you get in like an egg capsule that holds six people, and it's like was built a million years ago. This is not scientifically accurate. So it goes and like slowly takes you up in this curving motion until you get to the top, which is like a 30-foot walkway with windows the size of like a mask that a superhero would wear just for you to peek through. And then you go back down the other side in the claustrophobic egg capsule.
Wow. I really thought it was just an arch. Nope. I didn't think there was actually a purpose to it.
Gateway to the West, girly. Wow. Gateway to the West.
That's crazy.
This could be totally wrong, but I'm almost sure it was built for a state fair.
Oh, the... I feel like they're what? They did
World
have like
Fair,
the St. Louis World's Fair. That's what the the movie that I was in, Meet Me in St. Louis, was about. And by movie I was in, I mean my high school did a production of it. I wasn't in the movie with Judy Garland. Right.
But I thought you were. I was pretty sure.
Judy Garland.
I was pretty sure that you were in the movie.
Down in the jungle lived a maid.
That was
my favorite song in the school.
Keep going. Some of us were in plays in high school. It was fine.
If I do remember, I got in trouble one time. Because I don't know why I did this, but I was at Walmart with my mom because that's what we do like every Saturday. And I saw these high heels that lit up. They were silver and they lit up when you walked.
Did she call you a hey there?
Yes, she did.
Ooh.
And I was like, I need these. And we fought about it for a couple weeks. And then I got them and I wore them to a handbell concert at White Marsh Mall.
This is real life from Maryland.
And this is... history
on the rocks. great intro. I'm Allie Bain
and I'm Katie Greenwood,
and we're here to talk about two ladies tonight,
two ladies of our choosing. We're very excited about it.
Yes, we are. So
we're not historians.
No, not historians at all. We're just saying things that we feel like other people probably know, so we're just going to say it out loud.
Exactly,
with a little bit of extra detail and discussion,
right? Maybe a few things you didn't know, just to make it interesting.
And Katie got new headphones.
I did get new headphones.
Yay!
They're yellow because yellow is my favorite color.
So we've got to enlighten everybody on who we're talking about tonight.
Okay,
let's get physical. Excellent. My little lady has two appearances, right? One from the 1800s and one from the 1980s. So to be perfectly clear, I am covering a fantabulous fictional character this evening named Ariel, but actually not named the Little Mermaid. She has in the Disney version, 1986 version, a green tail, red hair, fair skin, build of a Barbie, and a purple shell bra. In Hans Christian Andersen's version from 1837, she is one of six lovely sisters, unlike the seven in the Disney world. She is the youngest and most beautiful, is a direct line from the story. Also a direct line is her skin is as soft as rose petals, soft and tender as rose petals. Her eyes are as blue as the deep sea. And like the others, she had no feet. Her body ended in a fishtail. And that is that. Those three lines are the Little Mermaid's full description.
Excellent.
Who you got?
So my person also has two different appearances.
Yes.
So
winky dink.
I know. So I am covering Lily Elbe. So Lily Elbe was born Einar Wegner. And so Einar Wegner was a, tall, regular built man. He was a little balding, kind of fair skinned because he was Danish. But Lily had nice, beautiful auburn hair have it kind of long. And Lily was most famous for her dark almond shaped eyes.
Ooh.
So
both Danish as well.
Yes,
that
I know, from the same area of the world.
Is exciting.
It is. I like that. Two Danish girls.
Uh-huh. So I think we're sitting here a little bit too sober.
I think so too.
Yeah. So let's start with my drink.
Okay.
I, because of the kiss the girl scene, which I'm going to tackle later, chose a drink called the Blue Lagoon, and it is literally pucker, vodka, lemon juice, and a maraschino cherry. So it should be thoroughly disgusting. So cheers. Cheers.
Oh. Woo! It is sour.
How come
puckers?
Puckery. How come I always choose the worst drinks?
I don't know. Yours are always like really fruity too.
It's literally just Google.
It's Google's fault.
It's not my fault. I just type in something, something cocktail and this is what happens. Mm. We got a lot to go.
Yes.
Also this evening, everybody, we are experimenting with martini glasses for the first time. So spillage may occur.
It may.
I'm sorry.
It certainly may.
Oh, you look cute in those headphones.
Thanks. I feel cute.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you kind of look like Pikachu.
Yes. All right. So tell me about Ariel.
Okay. I will tell you about Ariel, but I'm going to make a very clear distinction as I talk through, right? So when I say The Little Mermaid, I'm talking about Hans Christian Andersen's Little Mermaid because he did not give her a name.
Really?
She had no name. It was just The Little Mermaid. And then Disney gave her the name Ariel. So when I say Ariel, I'm referring to Disney. But I also might mix that up as I keep drinking.
Perfect.
So just assume I'm talking about one of the two.
Okay.
So as I said, Hans Christian Andersen was Danish and he published this story in 1837. And it's widely thought that he had this unrequited love for a man in the Netherlands who was getting married and he had to watch him get married. And this story was a love story to that man. So I found that to be really interesting because that's what pops up all over is the connections between the Little Mermaid story and the LGBT movement. So the story enters into an underwater kingdom where the king is a widower and he's living with just his mother and his six lovely daughters, all of which who are exactly 1 year apart, which leads me to wonder what is the gestation period of a mermaid? Because I feel like all six of them being 1 year apart is a lot of births to give. And it's maybe this is why Mama Mermaid's not around.
Yeah. I wonder if it's like egg style.
It's got to be egg style, right? That's what fish do.
I think they do like jelly eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet they're like jelly eggs. Half. just the bottom half is a jelly egg.
Just the bottom half. And then the top is a mammal. Is that what we're going with? No, yes. Because they can breathe underwater.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know. The point is the story enters when she's nine. So we don't get to see any of that gestation period. She is 9 years old. And in this kingdom, when you're 15, you get to go up to the surface for the first time. So it is not like a forbidden thing like they show in the Disney movie. It's like a coming of age ceremony where you're allowed to go to the surface.
Right.
And I feel like the thing where Ariel's not allowed to go to the surface is so cultural of the 1980s where like that's how teenage girls were supposed to act in reaction to their fathers.
Yeah.
So it's her 15th birthday, and she spends all these years, because she's the youngest, watching all of her sisters go up to the surface, and she's, like, so excited. She can't wait. So she goes up, and she sees this boat, and they're having a party. So it's her 15th birthday, and they're having somebody's birthday party on this boat. So fun fact, her and the prince have the same birthday.
Oh my gosh, just like me and Casey.
I know. I was going to say, do you know anyone like that? So she goes up and there is a storm that sinks the ship and she saves the prince and takes him to shore just like in the Disney movie. They got all that stuff right. But she just kind of sits around and waits for someone to find him. Mm. He never sees her, but he is found by this beautiful woman from a temple up at the top of the hill. And she kind of comes down and saves him and takes him off to safety. That is where the similarities between the two intros kind of stop, because past this point in the Disney movie, Ariel is fawning over trying to get to Eric. But in Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid, she is simply curious and trying to ask questions, but not about him as much as it is about her depression, it almost seems. Like, mm-hmm. she is not happy, and she doesn't understand why she's not happy. So she comes to find out by talking to her grandmother that mermaids live to be 300 years old, and then they cease their existence. They turn into seafoam. They have zero afterlife. And I think we'll find a lot in this story that there's weird religious subtext. Mm-hmm. And this one is clearly about the power of having an eternal soul, mm-hmm. and like whether or not mermaids are sentient beings. And I think we see that in a lot of fantasy. Like, you see, like, how important is a centaur versus how important is a troll versus, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's like they're all must be less than human.
Oh, yeah.
So she is striving to find a soul, not necessarily the prince. He ends up being a means to an end.
Okay.
And she does fall for him, but the main goal was the soul. She learns all this info from her grandmother, who unfortunately in the Disney version is replaced by a male bumbling seagull, a male fish bestie, and a male crab babysitter. So her so her like catalyst.
Well, you know what they say, it takes three men to do one woman's job.
Accurate, accurate. I just couldn't, I could not.
Three sea creatures. That is so funny.
It is. So the grandmother is like a catalyst for her life story. And so are her sisters. They're super duper supportive about her following her dreams and figuring out why she's so upset. And side note, her grandmother has 12 oysters attached to her tail, which is a super, super painful process that mermaids go through when they come of age. All the other people in the kingdom only have 6 oysters attached to their tail, but the grandmother has 12.
So do you want the oysters?
I think it's a pride thing. So the grandmother says pride must suffer pain. So it's like a discarding of your pride. It's almost like a, I don't know. It's weird. But the grandmother has the most of anybody, and she's seen as like wise and all knowing. So cool. I don't know. Kind of weird.
Like a clammy grandmother Willow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, exactly. Disney has one note. Only Disney didn't use her, and they could have.
I see a missed opportunity.
This is a massive missed opportunity.
I don't know. But then you wouldn't have the, what do they call it? The hair thing.
The Dinglehopper?
Yes. But then we wouldn't have the Dinglehopper, so.
You need the Dinglehopper.
Give and take.
So as they push her to explore her life, she ends up going to the Sea Witch to find out more information. This is to get a soul, not a prince. Okay. And the Sea Witch is totally willing to make a potion for her so that she can get a soul. Not necessarily human form. She's not asking for that yet. Okay. But she comes to find out that in order to get a soul, she needs to get human form. And the witch is actually acting as more of a doctor than a bad guy. The witch explains the painful transformation, mm-hmm. and how it's very, very difficult, and how she's not interested in deceiving the Little Mermaid, and she is... You know how Ursula and Ariel, she's like trying to trick her to get something out of it. And that's not the case with the Sea Witch in this story. So here's what she tells her. She tells her the sword is going to pass through your body and it is going to be extraordinarily painful. That's what it's going to feel like. And you will go from having a fish tail to 2 human legs, but you're going to be a freaking awesome dancer. Then she says, even though you're going to be a really good dancer, once this happens, you're going to constantly feel as if you're walking on sharp knives for the rest of your life as a human. You will only get a soul if you gain the love of a prince and marry him. But there is no time limit on it. It's not like the 3-day thing. Mm-hmm. And again, for Ariel, it was about the soul, not the guy. I'm going to keep saying that. Not for Ariel, for the Little Mermaid. For actual Ariel, it was about the guy. Mm-hmm. Little Mermaid agrees to this. And the Sea Witch has to literally cut open her own breast and bleed her black blood into this kettle, which is making me feel like the sea witch was really into helping her, and like she has to like bleed for the pain of what's about to happen.
Yeah, because she didn't have to do that.
No, she did not. She could have said, no, get out of here.
That's extra.
Yeah.
That's real extra.
Yeah. She's a try hard sea witch.
It almost sounds like a mothering thing too. Yeah. Like breast milk.
It's breast.
Like, I am like nurturing you so you can reach your full potential and is like what you want to be.
Very much so.
In a weird demonic way.
No, not even, because I'm about to get to something close to that. Not quite that, but close. And then she actually has to physically cut out the Little Mermaid's tongue. Not because of jealousy over her voice or trying to use it against her, but because it's part of the spell.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Early in the story, Hans Christian Andersen says that the Little Mermaid has this garden of all red flowers. All the sisters have one garden, and hers is of red flowers, which is typically symbolic of female genitalia when you're talking about like that, the red flower being a vagina. Let's just put it that way. And then it talks about how her whole life she's going to be in this pain, and it's going to, the blood is going to flow from you. And that to me sounded so much like menstruation and changing from a fish form to a female form, and knowing that there's religious undertones about the soul that will continue to come up. It felt very much to me like, if you become woman, you're also taking on this pain of the female species.
Right. And it's like almost like a sacrifice. I don't know, like a sacrifice of like, I am so wanting to be a woman that I am willing to go through all of this.
Yes.
Like, God, that's so much.
It's real weird. It's real weird the way it's written. So she goes to the surface. She finds the prince. He is mesmerized by her beauty, but he's kind of a douchey jerk this whole story. He's not Prince Eric, who I consider to be one of the best Disney princes.
Well, you think that because he looks like Jake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
No, but he is good. He like actually has a personality.
Yeah,
and a really cute dog.
Yeah, and the only reason he makes a mistake is because the witch brainwashes him.
Right.
There's no actual mistake ever made.
That's true, actually.
Yeah, he's like a... He's
real stand-up guy.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Takes to a puppet show. I like that part.
He doesn't get seasick. Right. So he has her dance for him all the time, like a court jester, because she's like good at it, but he makes her do it. And he calls her like his little companion and his like little foundling, like she's a pet. And she sleeps at the foot of his bed. And he says he loves her like a likable child. And it's really weird because she's falling for him, but he doesn't feel that way for her. But he's not mean about it. He just doesn't feel like that. And at one point, the prince tells his dumb little mermaid friend all about the wonders beneath the sea. He literally mansplains the ocean to the Little Mermaid during the story.
Mansplaining in the early 1800s.
Which I really like. But I mean, it's not like she had a tongue to say, I know, I was a freaking mermaid. But it's very funny. It was very tongue-in-cheek, I thought, of Hans Christian Andersen to be like, look at this dude. But the transaction between them is not rushed like it is in the Disney movie. So the original is very get married or you won't have an eternal life. The Disney movie was Ariel, kiss him or you have to go back to the water and your soul belongs to me. So she already had a soul. And that to me sounds a lot like don't tell or you'll get fired. Like if you say what happened, like this very like subconscious thing. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to read you some of the lyrics from Kiss the Girl, because I think that we breeze over this in the Disney version. This is, I think, maybe the second stanza. I would have to look at it. But it says, this is Sebastian. Yes, you want her. Look at her. You know you do. It's possible she wants you too. There's only one way to ask her. It don't take a word, not a single word. Go on and kiss the girl. Sounds like consent issues to me.
Yeah.
So good old Prince Eric and Sebastian were not thinking about what Ariel wanted.
I would say Sebastian wasn't.
Maybe Eric was. That's true, because he didn't.
In that scene, he was like really struggling with it.
Yeah, he's like, what's your name though?
Right. But then he had those stupid eels that were in the way.
But what was she wearing? So anyway, the prince is betrothed to this princess, not because he wants to, and he really doesn't want to marry her. He wants to marry the woman from the temple who saved him. Okay. Come to find out, the woman from the temple who saved him is the princess he's betrothed to, and she was just going to school there. So the prince gets married. He loves her. Not only that, but he has the Little Mermaid dance at his wedding on the barge. And the Little Mermaid is going to be turned into seafoam in the morning. But her older sisters are super supportive, and they show up, and they have traded all of their hair for a special knife from the sea witch. And all the Little Mermaid has to do is stab the prince while he's sleeping with his new wife. Not whilst he's sleeping with his new wife, while he's sleeping next to just his new wife. Yeah. And I'm not sure if they traded their hair permanently or just cut it off. But the women in this story are very, very supportive. The grandmother, the sisters, and even this new princess, and even the sea witch. Like, Ariel doesn't describe jealousy. Sorry, Little Mermaid doesn't describe jealousy towards the sea witch or the new wife. She values her grace and kindness, and actually makes it sound like the prince made a pretty good decision on who he wanted to marry. Whereas we said earlier, Eric was just like a brainwashed dummy.
Right.
Yeah. So she can't do it. She says he looks way too happy. So she throws the knife off of the wedding boat. She's awaiting her fate of death and nothingness, right? No soul. And most critics say this is where the story should have ended. Like, that was it. That was the end. That's what should have happened. However, we got to get a little 1800s morals on you. This is very Victorian moral tale of... It's written to scare children into good behavior. So, because she did this wonderful good deed of not killing the prince, she becomes a daughter of the air and must travel the earth doing good deeds for 300 years for a chance to get a soul.
Oh, there was for a chance to be seafoam.
No, terrible. No. A chance to get a soul, which sounds an awful lot like purgatory.
Yeah.
So that is the entire Hans Christian Andersen / Disney side note story. But I have a couple notes that I thought were important to infuse. So the Disney version, I think, robs women of their integrity quite a bit. Some of which I said because of, you know, things like the support of women in the story. One, because, you know, she's on a quest for a soul and not for a mate. But others, it's like, okay, so in the Disney movie, she has to choose between two men, her dad or a prince. Mm. And it's never like, well, you had this awesome passion for the world above the sea. What about just choosing that instead of a dude? Right. And Disney reduces love to a physical act of just a kiss, whereas Hans Christian Andersen has it as this long process where they could fall in love, but it's not sure. Mm. Ursula obviously tempts her and treats her like a fool for wanting to change, but the sea witch kind of commiserates with her, and she's like, look, mermaids can't feel emotions because they don't have a soul, and she understands why the mermaid would want to choose physical pain over emotional grief. Which I think is super important as I go to hit on Ursula in a minute, which I'm going to. But one of the last lines that Triton has in the Disney movie is, she really does love him. And then he makes the decision to change her. It wasn't about his daughter. It was about her liking Eric. Which I found to be her kind being of insulting.
Like trustworthy.
Like she really did have a whole tavern of things she's been collecting for years. That right. didn't point out that she loved above the water.
Well, and again, it's not like, oh, okay, she really wants to be of this world.
Yeah.
It's not that. No. She really loves him.
Right. It bugs me. And then he gives her.
And again, like even in the Disney movie, he's part two of the equation.
Oh, yeah.
Like. She has all, you're right, she has all that cavern, like the cavern of things, and he's just how to get to those things, really.
Yeah.
So it's not like, I mean, obviously he's like the catalyst for the whole story, but, right. but he really is like part two.
He's a means to an end. It's yeah. all it is, but I don't know. Ursula wants to take over the sea. So therefore she has to be evil. Mm-hmm. I feel as if that's painting the picture that women who want power must be evil.
Right. Because I would really like to hear the backstory on that. Because yeah. she's like, yeah, Triton stole power from me. And I'm like kind of pissed about it.
Right.
Like...
It's real weird. A lot of people writing about it on the internet are like, look, if you look at Eric's castle and Triton's castle, they're very like long and phallic shaped, which is just what castles look like. But then hers is like this like cavern, you know, that's kind of like it's weird the way that it's set up. But I can see that being, you know, castle shaped versus evil. But she's got this massive imposing cleavage, right? Mm-hmm. She is very devious and cruel and manipulative. And she continues to say things specifically in her Poor Unfortunate Soul song, which is fantastic. But the reason she's getting Ariel to change is she goes, at least you'll have your man. You have to give up everything you know, but at least you'll have your man. You know, this person wants to be thinner and this one wants to get the girl. Yes, I'm going to help them. But I will end my story on this fabulous segment of the song, and it's going to take all my power not to sing it. Men up there don't like a lot of blabber. They think a girl who gossips is a bore. Yet on land, it's much preferred for women not to say a word. And after all, dear, what is idle blabber for? Come on, they're not all that impressed with conversation. True gentlemen avoid it when they can, but they dote and swoon and fawn on a lady who's withdrawn. It's she who holds her tongue who gets the man.
Face is of, that Victorian or what?
Face of idle dread. Thank you, 1989, for giving us the Little Mermaid.
Well, and that kind of makes me feel like it's even like a little like tongue-in-cheek, like she's the bad person and she's like totally using the ideals from like when the Little Mermaid was first published of right. like women don't talk. Like,
right. Shut your mouth.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well, that was very interesting. I'm excited to compare the two. I've been writing notes.
Drink break.
And now we're going to take a little break, but we will be back in just a minute with more Herstory on the rocks.
On the rocks. Only they don't have to take a break.
Yeah, you don't have to take a break, but we'll
just
be right
us.
Back.
We have to go mix new alcohol.
Right.
So what'd you make me?
Okay. So my cocktail for the week is based on a cocktail I read about called the Common Lily.
Mm.
But because our lily is so special and so uncommon, I have renamed this the Uncommon Lily. So this drink has muddled blackberries, pineapple juice, gin, and then I top it off with lime juice and ginger ale, and then you put a little sprig of mint on top.
Ooh!
So
I'm excited to taste it. It's pink. Our last drink was blue.
Girls and boys.
Whoop. I was real scared. Cheers and over top of the equipment.
Really?
Oh, I just fell off my leg. Ooh, it's good.
I know. I was debating between using ginger beer or ginger ale.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use either ones. Either one. But
what did you say you used?
Ginger ale.
Oh, I got it.
Instead of ginger beer. Mm. Give it a little more light, effervescent taste.
Like it's floating.
Exactly. Wingardium Leviosa.
Leviosa. Not Leviosa.
So.
I love you, Hermione. Okay, go ahead.
So this drink is in honor of Lily Elbe. So Lily Elbe was born Einar Wegner in Vejle, Denmark, on December 28th, 1882.
How long did you practice that?
A long time. So when she was a teenager, so obviously because it's from Lily to Einar, Lily was born a man and transitioned later in her life to being female. So when she was, so I'm going to try to use the feminine pronouns as much as I can because she was a woman. So when she was a teenager, she moved to Copenhagen to study art at the Royal Danish Academy of Fine Arts. So there really isn't much known about Lily's early life because, again, this is like the late 1800s So a lot of it really wasn't written down, especially because she was from a really small town in Denmark. So we basically go from like she was born on this date, she went to school here, and then she meets Gerda.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Do we know if women were allowed to go to school at that point in the Netherlands?
They must have been, because that's where she met her wife.
Okay.
Yeah, so she met her wife at art school, so they must have been able to go. So, yeah, because so they meet at art school. So her wife's name is Gerda Gottlieb.
Mm. Another good practice.
Another good practice.
Did pronunciation guides help you?
No, I've just been assuming.
Oh, okay.
From how the...
Because it'll help me.
From how they talk over there.
Why'd you go Texas with your accent?
So Einar and Gerda met at an art show, because again, like, we're in Einar's life stage right now, not Lily's, because Lily doesn't come about until later.
Mm.
So, and they met at an art show in art school, and they quickly fell in love. So they married in 1904 when Einar was 22 and Gerda was 19. They were a really happy couple. They loved painting together. Einar painted landscapes, and Gerda painted women in fashionable outfits in an Art Deco style.
Hmm.
So soon after they were married, Gerda's career started to like really take off. So she entered this art contest and she won, and she started illustrating a lot for like women's fashion magazines. So if you saw her work, you'd like really recognize it. So it's very Art Deco, very like Rockefeller Center, and like those really cool like pale colors and like just oddly shaped people. Like, it's really cool.
Like the early 1900s style.
Yeah, exactly. It's her art is really interesting. So some of her most popular work featured a woman with almond-shaped eyes, and people were like immediately drawn to her.
Hmm.
And so they kept saying like, okay, can you like do this fashion thing, but like with that model? They're like, who is this model? Who is this model? We'll find out later who that model was.
I bet I can guess.
So
that's like cliffhanger before a commercial break.
So her career is like rising. And so to know this story, you also have to know there's a movie made a couple years ago with Eddie Redmayne and Alicia Vikander called The Danish Girl. And some of the stuff in the movie was not, you know, portrayed correctly. It was actually criticized a lot for that. But one of the things that was portrayed very correctly was how Lily was born.
Okay.
So it was actually portrayed like rather correctly in the movie. So the scene is that Gerda is painting a picture for a magazine, and it's like this beautiful photo of, you know, picture of a woman in like a silk white like ballerina dress, and her model for the day like is nowhere to be found. Like, you know, like, she's like a model actress, and like she's late, she's not coming. So she's like, oh, like, you know, Einar, can you please like step in for the model? Like, I just need to finish this like painting, please. And he's like, no, I don't want to do it. And she's like, no, please. So he puts it on, and he has like this like beautiful like ballerina dress on, and these like silk stockings and these white slippers. And he's literally like sitting there posing for his wife. And he's like, oh my gosh, like this feels so right.
Huh.
And he has this like kind of like life changing experience.
And he didn't want to put it on to start with.
Hmm. So one of the quotes that like he actually wrote in his autobiography, she said, I cannot deny, strange as it may sound, that I enjoyed myself in this disguise. I liked the feel of soft women's clothing. I felt very much at home in them from the very first moment. So immediately she's like, okay, I like this. So then the actress slash model actually comes in. So her name was Anna. And so she comes in. Let's see, what is her name? Anna Larson. So Anna Larson comes in, she shows up, and she's like, oh my gosh, like, you look beautiful. And she like hands her these slides, and she goes, we'll call you Lily. And then Lily was born. So Lily would soon become Gerda's favorite model and also favorite companion to go out with. So they'd like go out to parties and they'd hang out, and she would portray herself as Einar's cousin who was just visiting from out of town. So they would kind of go just like out on the town and hang out at parties and stuff. And she like loved it, because she was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm like, this is so much fun.
So wait, she did this with her wife?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, her wife was
super supportive.
Incredibly supportive.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So she was just incredibly supportive. But in 1913, the public discovered that Lily was, in fact, Gerda's husband. And they found out that all those portraits were of a man, not a woman. And they were outraged.
Ooh.
So they
this decided. Is like right about Prohibition era, yes. too. So like people were super moral. And that's right. in the U.S., even right. though they're in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. but still.
So they decide, they're like, okay, we got to get out of Denmark. So they move out of Denmark and they move to Paris because mm-hmm. they're like, we really want to live like this more bohemian, relaxed lifestyle. Like, you know, we want to be in like a really accepting city. And at that time, like if you wanted to be weird and out there, like Paris was the place to be. Mm. So through all this, Gerda is just being like the most supportive person. She's being Gerda's like best friend. And so she's like kind of encouraging her. Like, I think at first she was like a little uncomfortable. Then she was like, I thought we were just kind of kidding around. But then like she slowly accepted like, okay, you've always been Lily. Mm. I get that now. So she's being supported by her. But then like, so they're in this new city and she's still going out and she's passing. But like she's not very happy. And she just becomes increasingly depressed. And she's just at this point in her life where she's like, I just like, I am not feeling like myself. And I am feeling like a woman and I'm looking like a woman. But then she looks at her body and she's like, but I'm not a woman.
Oh.
So she picks a date for her suicide. So she's going, she decides, she's like, I'm going to do it in May. I think it was like May 30th or something like that. And she is like, I'm just going to do it. Like, I'm so sick of this. And then right before she, like, you know, she's kind of planning it. And like right before she's about to do it, she kind of hears about this doctor named Magnus Hirschfeld, who was studying what he called transsexualism.
Huh.
At this place. Called
what year is this?
So this is in the 19... like teens. So okay. like almost the 1920s. So like wow. right in between that era. So he's studying at the German Institute for Sexual Science. So he like founds this like sexual science, like, you know, place. And he is imagining what surgeries would look like to transform genders at the time. So things to know about Hirschfeld. He was an openly gay man. And he rejected the idea of homosexuality as a mental illness because that's what everybody thought at the time. They're like, oh, you're a degenerate. You're disgusting. Like, it's a mental illness. You need to be fixed. You need to be cured. Mm. And there's like this scene in The Danish Girl, which I don't think actually happened because I couldn't find anything on it, where they literally put like a radiation machine like against like Einar's genitals. And they're like putting like radiation straight on his like genitals to like cure him. It's crazy. So, so Hirschfeld is like,
how does
really
that
big.
Feel as a radiation specialist? Tell me.
Terrible. So he is homosexual and he is just like kind of trying to like alter these like views that people have, by creating this, you know, safe space of learning about it. And he's doing like experiments and things like that, which I'm sure were very problematic at the time. Cause like it was early science and things like that. But one of his first patients was Dora Richter. So Dora Richter was actually the first person to undergo gender reassignment surgery.
Huh.
But there isn't really a lot known about her because unfortunately in 1933, the Nazis were in, because this institute was in Dresden.
Okay.
And so 1933, Nazis came in and burned everything.
Ooh.
So that's also why we actually don't know a whole lot about Lily from these documents, is because they were all burned. So everything's destroyed. But Lily goes and she meets with this doctor. And in 1930, she undergoes her first surgery. So this is to remove her testicles. So she gets that done, rest for a little bit. And then the second surgery was the transplantation of ovaries into her body. So then she gets ovaries put in.
Is that common? Is that a thing?
No.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, like,
they just give estrogen shots, right?
Right. Now right. they just give estrogen shots and things like that. And I don't know if they would actually be able to produce in the body. Like, I'm not a scientist, so I really don't know. But I don't think that's
You're not a scientist. You're
now.
Not a historian.
I'm not
What
anything.
Are you doing here?
So They put the ovaries into her body. That goes fine. The third surgery was to remove the penis and the scrotum. So then they do that. So during these surgeries, Lily is actually able to change her name and gender legally. So she goes through the whole system. She gets a passport with all of this new information. So here's what's funny. So she does all this. The government's like, all right, cool. You're a woman. Like, whatever. Fine. And then they're like, but whoa, whoa, whoa. You're married to a woman. So
when she was a male, it was cool.
Right. So they void her marriage to Gerda.
No.
It's annulled by the government.
I'm still stuck on the ovaries thing. Like, yeah. What did they connect them to?
I have no
idea. Were they just floating around in there?
They said they put them in her like abdominal muscles. I don't know. It's like,
wouldn't they just like rot and fall off? That's what I would think. So
I
guess,
I really don't know. Honestly, like I wish I knew more about
it. It might have been
surgeries.
Like a woman in menopause. Like they don't, right. The ovaries don't continue to produce eggs, but they're just there.
But I can't imagine they'd be producing eggs in her body if they were transplanted there.
Our producer is shaking his head vigorously.
Yeah. Right? They can't, right?
No. No way.
No, they definitely can't. Okay. So, but they're in there, I guess, just to say she has ovaries and like to make her feel more like a woman.
Yeah, go for it.
I would say
go for boobs, but I mean.
Right. That is the funny thing. It's like, that's like the one surgery they didn't do. It's like the boobs.
She didn't get boobs?
No, not that I know of, you know, because this was like, because again, all the records were destroyed.
Right.
So we really don't know the exact details except for what she wrote about in her memoirs.
Got it.
So, so she changes all this stuff and then she has to get an annulment from Gerda, who's been like the most supportive person in her life. Like the Danish government literally just voids it for them. Like they're like, you can't do that, which is just so funny to me because it's like, I would think that changing your gender on all of your legal documents would be the thing that they would be like, whoa, hold your horses. Like, no way. But they were like, I'm sure they weren't fine with it, but it all went through.
Right.
Like, I don't know. It's just.
And now it's really like, now that you officially are defined as a woman, you cannot be married to this other woman.
Right.
Who you've been married to for
at this point,
years.
It's like 20 years.
Yeah. Crazy.
So, or no, not quite 20. Like 16. No. Yeah. Over 20. Because they're married in 1904 and this is 1930.
Go ahead and round.
That's 26 years.
I'm cool with rounding.
So. They've been married for 26 years at this point. The government makes them get an annulment. Okay, so here we are. And there was something else I wanted to say.
All the things.
Okay, because I was thinking about, like, during this section when I was reading, I was thinking about what it takes for you to get your gender legally changed in this country. Because I know when I was in school and, like, we were studying all this stuff, you know, I had a couple of trans people like in my program and they were saying like, yeah, you have to get approval from like three different doctors that say like, yes, this person is not their birth gender. And like, you have to get all this stuff. You have to go through like a really long period of time of like mental evaluation.
Really?
Yes. It's like what people have to go through to change their gender now is like really, really intense.
Huh.
And I was just thinking a lot about that when I was reading about Lily.
I will say anything you have to do with your body, there are an intense amount of doctor's appointments that go along with it. Like I had to get, when I got implants, I had to get a couple of doctors to approve my health.
Really?
Yeah. And then when I donated eggs, I had to go to psych appointments to make sure that I was not going to be like crazy and trying to like hunt down women who were like having children that are genetically mine. Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy too, because I feel like men can donate sperm and it's like, whatever.
Yeah. Well, men can literally have sex with you and walk away from the baby.
That's true.
It's like, they're just, I mean, yeah, I just, there's a lot of covering of the bases in the medical field. But I mean, I was just bringing that up because I find it interesting as well to get it's so much approval and so much psych treatment. It's like, no, dude, I'm just a girl. I was born a girl. I'm a girl. Just fix it.
So. So she's going through all this stuff there. So Gerda was actually like, no, it's cool. You actually need your space anyways. So she's like, you'll be good on your own. She's like, I'm going to go live my life. Because Gerda was actually, like, some sources say she was bisexual. Some say she was lesbian. Some say she was completely straight. I think she was bisexual. Because a lot of her later art was very, like, lesbian erotica. Mm. Like, it's super graphic. And she had a lot of affairs with men and women. So she was like, that's totally cool. Just, like, do your thing. But she did get married to another man after their annulment. She like moved to Morocco or something. But she always loved Lily and she continued to encourage her in her new lifestyle. And she would even send her flowers on a regular basis.
Aww.
God, I mean, is there anyone better than Gerda?
Can I marry Gerda?
I know, right?
Actually, yes, I can.
Because it's 2018. So meanwhile, so Lily is just thriving in her new body and she loves it. And she even accepts a marriage proposal from an old friend. So she's about to get married, but she was like, no, before I get married, I want one last surgery so I can bear children for my new husband. Couple things that are not super scientifically sound about this. So she gets, so her final surgery is she gets a uterus transplanted into her body. And she also, but also it's like she, at this point, she's in her late 40s. Like, so a natural woman, like a regular, like woman born woman would already be close to getting, you know, getting closer to menopause at this point, right? Anyways, so she's already a little bit older,
and this is in, you know, years and years ago. It's all, it's still considered a high risk pregnancy today
with all of our medical, you know how,
right?
So imagine doing this in 1931
without a uterus,
without a, yeah.
So yeah. I can't at all.
So they, and of course, like, they didn't have the science to know that, like, that really isn't going to work. And they also didn't have the medicine to keep the uterus from being rejected. So that's exactly what happened. So she gets this uterus, and they were also, they constructed an artificial vagina too. So, and it was all in the hopes to have children with him, because her and Gerda never had kids. So her body, of course, rejects the new organ because it can't not at this right. point in science and technology. And she passed away from heart paralysis on September 13th, 1931 at the age of 48.
Wow.
Yeah. And right before she died, she wrote to a friend, I, Lily, am vital and have a right to life. I have proved by living for 14 months, it may be said, that 14 months is not much, but they seem to me like a whole and happy human life.
Oh.
No, 14 months. That was all, like, which was also crazy that she went through four surgeries in 14 months.
I mean, that's what's going to cause heart paralysis, right? Like, take it slow. Even today, the transitional period is very long because of the recoveries and the meds you have to take. And I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah. And it just made me so, like, I mean, I'm happy for her that, like, she felt so fulfilled in those 14 months. But it also made me so sad, like, ugh, she only had 14 months of, like, really feeling like herself. And, like, but she was also just such a pioneer, though, for, you know, transgender people. And, like, they look at Lily and they think, like, okay, like, that is a person who sacrificed so much just to be her true self.
Right, like, it's doable.
Right.
Right.
So, now that we've introduced our two ladies, we're going into Just the Two of Us.
So, I feel very strongly that one of the things you said that struck me, a chord with me, is not feeling like yourself. Mm-hmm. So, when I first got pregnant, I miscarried two times and I felt so very not like a woman because I couldn't accomplish this task.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is probably, I mean, on a much larger scale, what Lily was going through as the, like, I do not feel like I'm truly a woman if I cannot accomplish this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of women go through that. And in the case of Ariel or the Little Mermaid, it was described as having no soul.
Mm.
And it's so very much like a, I don't have a soul in this form. I need to move to another form to get my soul.
Right. And it's almost like those painful parts of womanhood, like giving birth and menstruating. Because I was thinking about that same thing when you were talking about like the field of red flowers and like menstruation as a means to womanhood and giving birth as a means to womanhood. So like that was Lily's end goal, where she was like, I want to give birth to a child because I am a woman. And Ariel is like, I want to have a soul. So I want to go through all those pains of womanhood. Like, I don't know. It's just an interesting thing to think about. Like, you can't be a woman without going through like some serious bullshit. It's like you have to earn your stripes or whatever Tony the Tiger would say.
Well, he would say they're great.
Oh, that's true.
he wouldn't say you.
That's right. He's a man, so everything's great for him.
He's not a white man, though. So
half white.
Is he?
Just his stomach. Stripes.
Tiger stripes aren't white, Katie.
What?
Have you seen a tiger?
Oh, they're orange and black.
I can't. Okay.
Got that out.
Never! So I felt like when you were talking about Lily saying she felt like she was in this disguise when being dressed in female clothing because she herself had not been physically transformed yet. Mm-hmm. I feel like that the scene in Disney's version of The Little Mermaid where she's stumbling around the beach in like that bed sheet that's kind of tied on.
It's a sail.
Yeah. Yes. That must be what it is. I've never put that together. At least Scuttle could come up with an outfit real quick.
That's true. Right.
But I feel like that was what it was. So Hans Christian Andersen, like, the change for The Little Mermaid was like, you're going to be in a lot of pain, but you're going to be freaking real good at dancing and walking and being human. But for Ariel, it was much more like, now I'm human. I've left everything that I know behind. And this, even though it's me and it's what I want, it still feels real strange.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's an unfortunate, what do you call it? Like, side effect of like people who are in transition is like they have to go through that awkward period of like, all right, I'm uncomfortable like all the time right now, you know? And again, like I'm not trans, so I don't personally know how it feels, but you know, I love seeing like, cause I have a few friends that are trans, you know, on Facebook and stuff, and they like post, and it's interesting cause they post photos of like, this is like, you know, week like 57 of being on estrogen or being on testosterone. And like, I'm growing a mustache and like they get so excited and it's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's like so exciting to see them going through that. But also like when I think about like times when like trans friends have been like, yeah, I go to the bathroom and then I don't know which way to go because anyone I go, people feel uncomfortable around me, you know? And because we live in such a binary society, it is so difficult to like know what the right decision is in every situation.
Right. And it's such a, I feel like it's such a rejected community in many ways in that like even, I guess if I was trying to link the two women together, the scene I would think about in the Disney movie is when everybody at the table opens up their plates and it's seafood. And Ariel's like, of course I'm not going to eat this. These are my friends.
Right.
So it's just so uncomfortable because she like is so very confident in who she is. Like, I am human. I am wearing this cute pink dress. I am brushing my hair with a fork. I'm like ready to go. But then you present something that is so utterly distasteful to who you are as a person that it becomes very hard to tackle.
Right. And it's something that like it's invisible to everyone else around you.
Right.
Because to Prince Eric, like he's like, what's the problem? It's a fucking crab.
Right.
Like, just eat it.
Yeah.
Also, who eats a crab like that? The way they portrayed it, the crab was like stuffed with lettuce.
In Netherlands.
And flour.
Killing fish. Killing fish. Oh,
Caroline,
I love
play that
fish.
Shit.
Yeah. Saying that.
So, and one of the other things when I was listening to your story, I found very interesting that, like, so you started off with the story about how Hans Christian Andersen, like, wrote that story for a guy that he was in love with.
Yes.
And I think about Hans Christian Andersen as a gay man in the 1800s, like, giving this confused person life, Ariel, or the Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
And I think about the doctor in Lily's story, you know, Magnus Hirschfeld, who was also a gay man, you know, in the 1800s to early 1900s, and trying to give birth to other, you know, people, like trying to give birth to Lily, like, I can help you.
Right.
You know, and how confusing that must have been too, because he's trying to live this open life and he really can't, but he's trying very hard to let other people live their lives. And you have poor Hans Christian Andersen, who's like, I can write about it. Like,
so in love. And that's why the end scene is so weird.
Yeah.
If the Little Mermaid had just like become nothingness in the sea, that seems like the real ending.
Yeah.
But I think the rest of it was such the pressures of the faithful community on his life. Like, if I can do good things for 300 years, it will negate my gay feelings.
Right.
Which is so unfair.
Mm-hmm. And it's also like, and it makes me sad because like those stories just don't always end like that.
No.
You know, I mean, they end in depression and sadness and unfortunately like suicide and things like that, you yeah. know? And I'm happy that that didn't happen to either Hans Christian Andersen or Lily, but in a way it kind of happened to Ariel. Like she threw that dagger into the sea knowing that like she could never be her full person.
Right.
You know, but in a weird way, of course, like she gained a soul by like you don't make a decision like that without having a soul.
Right.
Which I think is an like, I don't know, like the underbelly of that whole story is like she keep, it's like the, what's his face? The fucking Tin Man.
Yes. And I have no heart, but clearly he had a heart.
He's the most emotional one.
Right.
Like, and he's like, has the biggest heart. And I think that's the whole like thing about that movie is like the thing that you want so badly, like you make it for yourself.
Yeah.
Like Ariel made herself a soul. Lily made herself a woman, like sometimes to their detriment, but
I would absolutely agree with that.
Yeah. Well,
time for toasties.
I think time for toast.
Toasty pants. You go first. I feel okay. like I went first a lot of the weeks.
I think you have too.
I don't know if that's true, but go for it.
So I would obviously like to make my toast to the trans community because sometimes you are seen too much for comfort, maybe your own comfort, and sometimes you're not seen enough. And to anyone who feels uncomfortable in their own skin and who thinks that maybe this transition period is too long and too hard, because it does get better and it will get better. And we love you.
So we do love you.
Lily. Cheers.
Lily. Not Harry's mom, though.
Mm-mm. Not Lily Potter.
We'll do that later.
A mother's love.
Okay. So, my toast to the Little Mermaid would be for any person who feels as if they have to channel the things that they really want through someone else, whether they're a male or female, because they do not have enough power to achieve them on their own. Just be confident and brave and quit that other person.
There you go.
Cheers!
Cheers! All right.
So what do you want to promo? Ooh.
So I am going to promo an album by a band called Tennis. And God, these people are so cute. And they make beautiful music. And they have a new album out. Oh my God. Yours Conditionally. So Tennis, Yours Conditionally. It's a really great album, and I highly recommend it. It's been really keeping me company the past couple of days.
So that's hysterical, because I was going to promote an album.
Really?
Yeah. But it's a really old album.
Ooh.
So Michelle Branch and Vanessa like teamed up. Did you remember this?
Vanessa Carlton?
Yeah.
Wait. Oh my gosh. The Wild Things.
The Wreckers?
The Wreckers. Yeah. Yes.
So it's like one of my favorite albums. I love every song. And I'm not a huge country girl. Like I like country, but this is very pop country. And I feel like the critical acclaim is not there for this duo. And I think it should be so that they can like do it again.
I remember this from when like you were in high school and yeah. you're like showed me this album and you're like, this is awesome. And
it's so good.
It is very good.
You can find most of the songs on YouTube, so you don't even have to buy it. Don't tell Michelle and Vanessa I said that. But it's very good. And I feel like it needs a re-listen in this decade, specifically track 10. Go find it.
Perfect. Well, to end as we normally do, let's make a note that well-behaved women
aren't good with Legos.
Rarely make history.
Yay! Cheers, everybody. Bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Her Story on the Rocks. We are independently produced by 1986 Entertainment and proudly recorded in Baltimore, Maryland. If there's a woman in history you would like us to cover, you can email us at herstoryontherocks@gmail.com. And if you would like to drink along with us, follow us at Her Story on the Rocks on Instagram. We post the recipes for each cocktail a couple days ahead of time. You can also find us on Facebook at Her Story on the Rocks and on Twitter at Her Story on the Rocks. Happy drinking! Cheers!